Good morning and welcome. If you're online, a special welcome to you as well. But it's so good to see so many people here today, a few that I recognize and a few more that I don't. If I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you yet, my name is Tom Keneally, and as Bill mentioned earlier, I'll also be joining us full-time in daily life anyway, or in fellowship at the start of next year. And that's a really exciting time. I want to just reiterate our thanks as well for the Battelle team and particularly Ben for sharing his story. It's a hard thing to do coming up here and sharing your heart like that. Just also want to reiterate, if you felt connected to Ben's story as well, we'd love you to get in contact with us so that we might be able to connect you with someone who can help, so you don't have to go it alone for as long as maybe Ben had to as well. So please do reach out if you feel the need. I don't know about you or how much you know about me, but I grew up in a bit of an interesting environment as a kid. I grew up in several different households, three at the same time as a shared custody arrangement, so that was always a bit interesting. One of the things that I found interesting about that, though, is I never really grew up around wise people. There was no one really to look up to as a kid. There was always someone making particularly not great choices. And I kind of had an understanding of that as a teen, somewhat, particularly. And I grew an interest in what made people wise or better at doing life, maybe, is another way of saying that. And so I remember as a teenager reading the story of King Solomon. Let's see if that works. Yes, it does. Awesome. Of King Solomon, which is briefly up there, but basically it's this story where King Solomon is supposed to be the super wise guy, right? And really good at doing life well. And there's this moment where two women come to him, both claiming to have this newborn child, and he has to decide who is right and who is wrong and how to do this. And as a teenager, I read that story a couple of times, and I decided that the way King Solomon was wise was because he was able to kind of trick these women, right, and win the situation. He was able to figure out like a different option and in trick kind of manipulate the situation almost. Hopefully I don't have to tell you that's not what being wise is really about, but that's what I thought it kind of was as a teenager, right? And that I surely hopefully don't have to tell you really affected my relationships, that I thought this virtue of being wise was a way of just kind of winning situations in relationships. And it really caused problems for me in my relationships growing up. And maybe you can kind of relate to that you held maybe wisdom or a different virtue upheld it, but it was kind of twisted. It was wrong in your mind. Or maybe you're looking at it from a different angle, and maybe you see your relationships and they're just not what you would hope they would be. They're just not right, and you know that, but you don't know what to do about it. Maybe those relationships are within your marriage or your partnership. Maybe it's, you know, your kids and you just can't figure it out, or maybe it's your parents. And maybe for you at the moment, it's getting to that point where you can't really see a way forward and you don't know what to do. Or maybe it feels like it's gone past that point and there's just no real turning back. Well, I'm glad to tell you that we're not the only people who's felt that way. And the book of James, in particular, these verses we're going to look at, really enlightens that situation. It comes at it in a really interesting way. It doesn't just necessarily help us heal our personal relationships, but it also helps us with every interaction that we have with others, really change the way we do it and bring it to a new level. So if you want to go to James 3, 13 to 18, if you haven't already, that would be great. We haven't had a little bit of context on James for a little while, last couple of weeks, so I might just give you a quick recap as you're getting there if you're not there already. The book of James is written by a guy named James. Crazy, I know. He was an early church leader, and particularly of the Church of Jerusalem, right? He was known as James the Just. And the crazy part about that was he was actually Jesus' half-brother. Do you know how much you have to do to be known as something other than Jesus' brother? Instead of being Jesus' brother, he was known as James the Just. So he was really quite prominent and wise. And being the half-brother of Jesus, he grew up with Jesus, right? So he literally grew up right next to Jesus, learning straight from the source. And he also spent a lot of time, it would seem, in the book of Proverbs and learned a lot from there, which is the book of wisdom in the Old Testament. So James is quite uniquely suited to teach us about wisdom and what that looks like for us. Alrighty, so let's get into it. So what I usually do is I go through the verse again, break it down a little bit with some comments, and then we'll pull something out for us that we can use this week. So it says in verse 13, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom." So James begins this section on wisdom with a question, and it's obviously somewhat rhetorical. He doesn't necessarily expect a response from you. But he actually ends up giving you a way to measure how you could respond. He tells you how to notice this. He gives you a way to answer this question, and he says it is a life of a person who is characterized as a good life by humility and good deeds. It's something you can see in someone else. In verse 14, he continues, "But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but it is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil." Now, in James' time, he's trying to be real clear here. Envy is not necessarily a bad thing in James' time. Envy could mean you could be envious of someone's good characteristic, like someone being super righteous. You could envy that and then want to emulate that. But he's trying to be clear here by saying it's a bitter type of envy. It's a negative type of envy that we might be more comfortable talking about today. James also calls those who are not humble to stop boasting of their wisdom, particularly because this is not a good thing. That is a clear sign for James that wisdom is not godly or good, that it comes from the devil. He continues in verse 16, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice." James really tries to nail home here that if this is the type of wisdom you find in someone, there is disorder and ugliness and evil that is underneath the surface, even if it doesn't seem like it from the surface. It's something to really be worried about, even if it looks good on the outside, it is truly not. Verse 17, he says, "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving," or peacemaking is another way of saying that, "considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness." James then moves on for us to start outlining the different characteristics and marks of a life of someone who is wise. The things we might want to start doing ourselves or for someone that we might want to find in life. The word considerate here can also be translated as humble, which is a strong indication of the type of life that James is looking for us to have, or the type of behavior. So again, like I said, I like to break it down a bit further and pull some things out that we might be able to actually use this week. So in the ancient world, and I might have to skip a few. Yeah, missed it. Terrible slides, guys. I'm terrible slides. That's all right. So in the ancient world, there was a bit of a different definition to wisdom than today. Not by much, but there's very much a different definition to biblical wisdom, right? In the ancient world, it more spoke about someone's skills or experience in particular areas or in life in general, right? And in the modern definition, it's pretty much the same, except they add a bit of good judgment as well, right? So it starts coming a bit closer. But biblical wisdom more speaks of someone who has an integrated life. For someone who states their values as one way, and you can actually see that in their behavior too. They have the right type of values and the right living that goes along with that. But more on top of that is those right type of values don't necessarily stem from within themselves. It stems from God, who is said to be wisdom in itself, or to be wise as well. So those values come from something else that is bigger than us, but there is also a right living that is integrated into that value system. And that's biblical wisdom for James at the very least. And so as such, James truly wants us to consider what godly wisdom is like. And he reminds us that godly wisdom has a quality to it that is visible. There's a groundedness to it. It's practical. You can see it. However, he also wants us to compare that with earthly or unspiritual wisdom, which is lofty. It's unreachable. It's typically more intellectual than it is practical, and it kind of puts yourself above everyone else. It elevates the person versus elevating the whole, right? So that is the first separation between the two that James likes to point out. James also then gives us another way of removing the two from each other, and that's the way in which they speak. One is it doesn't actually speak much at all. It speaks only in really the way that matters, which is through action. Instead of trying to boast about itself, it helps others. It does something for others, and it lets them decide on their own. But earthly wisdom boasts in itself. It says, listen to me because I know the way, I've already done this, or whatever. I know it, you don't. Be quiet, let's go, right? That's the type of wisdom that God doesn't really want from us. It's not the one that we are looking for. So then we move on with James to ways that we can look at having essentially the principal ways that true wisdom can be seen. Ways that we might aspire to, but ways that we can also filter true wisdom through as well. And James begins outlining these principal ways with the word pure or holy or set apart. Essentially what he's saying is the true wisdom can only really come from God, the one who is set apart and holy and perfect. And that is also what we're trying to obtain if we want true wisdom, is to reach towards a holy life. Now, in this life, we probably won't ever really get there to completion because that's not how this works. We're all very flawed. But it's still something that we should aim towards. And it's something that should set our mind on God, who is the only true source of wisdom. James then moves on to describing wisdom as peace-loving. An important aspect of peace-loving is that it prioritizes relationships. It encourages healthy relationships between yourself and others, but also others and other people still. It is prioritizing those relationships that is wise. And sometimes we think of wisdom as more about getting a job done, but it puts something more above just getting the job done. It loves healthy relationships. Again, it also loves being humble or considerate. It loves putting the needs of others above your own and taking action towards it. It's not just about thinking about others, but it's also about acting for others without being prompted to do so. James seems to think that those who take action without being asked to meet the needs of others is a wise person. The next one is a harder one, at least for me. I don't know about you, where it says that a wise person is submissive. I think whenever we talk about being submissive in our culture today, it can really be a trigger. It can be a hard thing to talk about and even consider doing, because there's been numerous times in the past, whether in your own life or somewhere you can point to, where that gift of being submissive to someone else has been abused and you've been hurt. Maybe it's with your parents or someone else in that relationship style. But submissiveness can be hard, but it is a gift. And being truly wise isn't always going to be easy either. And maybe it's not the challenge for you today to focus on this aspect of being wise, but I dare say that God will call you to answer that challenge one day. And the important part to remember about this is that anything God calls you to, any challenge, if you lean on him, he'll help you through it. Another thing to remember though as well about being submissive in this context is it might not be the way you're thinking submissive is. Sometimes when we think of submissive, we think of this idea of almost being a robot, that whatever someone else says, we take on board, we do straight away without question. Instead, the way this word is supposed to be translated as submissive is actually a military type word. It's a word of a soldier underneath their commander, someone who listens and considers what's being told to them and does. It's a willful thing. It's not just a passive thing. And that's important. because we're willfully giving this gift away. And it's hard, but it's a willful choice. Then we move on as well with James, and he says it's full of mercy. And if you can't see yet, a lot of these different parts of being wise are to do with relationship. It's to do with relationship with others. And so full of mercy, it recognizes the imperfection of others that we also have as well. And it also recognizes the beautiful reflection of God's image in them too. And in the midst of both of those things, it allows people grace and mercy. It allows us to act towards them as we might hope people would act towards us in a similar situation. James also thinks it should be impartial and does not favor those closest to us or those who society deems as more important, which we've also talked about in James before. And finally, it is sincere about its goal to love others well. And this is the starting point. If you don't feel like you're wise or can handle any of this, this is the starting point, is to get serious about trying to love others well. It's not going to be easy, but it's an important goal if you want to be wise. It's definitely the first step. So, as you may have heard, or may not, I like challenging us for what we're going to face in the next week, right? I like seeing transformation in our lives, because if we're just gathering for knowledge reasons, that's fine. But I think God wants something more from us. I think he wants transformation and change. So here is the challenge, and it's a bit more open than I usually leave it. But over the next 2 weeks, I want you to pick one way you can live out this true wisdom. So here are the questions, and I think consider them and choose one. So do you need to create more peace in your relationship? Are your relationships feeling tense? Or perhaps they're feeling a bit too heated too often? I want you to ask yourself, how can I make peace, and take action on that? Do you often think about yourself more than others? And that's a hard thing to decide that you might do. Well, then I want you to ask, what needs does this person have? And get specific with it. And then take action without any prompting. If it's, say, your parents, maybe they do a bit more around the house than you. Maybe you could take a bit off their plate. Maybe it's your partner, and they're really stressed about some deadline coming up. Help make space for them, or see if there's a task in that you can do for them. Consider their needs and put them above your own, and just take action on it. You don't have to make a big deal about it. It can be something small. Do you often put your point of view above others? Then maybe you need to face the challenge of submission. It's a difficult challenge, but I guarantee that it's one that will expand your relationships in completely new ways. Maybe you've been about making sure people feel the full effects of their mistakes lately, ensuring that they learn the lesson without offering much love. Maybe you can show someone this week a bit of mercy. Even if it's just someone who cuts you off as you drive, even if it's something small, instead of honking them, take that breath and wait and allow them their day. I think it's important to start small, and I think C.S. Lewis would agree with me, and put it this way. If you build the habits in small ways, when you face harder challenges, your habits will continue. So seriously, consider making a small change if a big change is too hard this week. So I want you to choose one way to transform your walk this week. And if you want, I'm happy after the service, if you're in person, or maybe shoot me a Facebook message or something, to discuss what that might look like in a very practical way for you. I think it's really important. All right. But I also want to draw your attention to the future of what this could look like. Can you imagine if every one of us here today did a small change like I've discussed? Started challenging ourselves and becoming truly wise, it would absolutely shift the dynamics of all your relationships. And I know that sounds big from such a small thing, but it will happen. It will change them in a way that brings peace and love and hope into those relationships. It could also change our community as a whole, not just this church, but all around us. It will bring a hope and love into the community that is unique to a God who decided to become man and die for us, just to restore us out of love. And it would also change this church into a place that the community could rely on, as a place that brings peace and hope to others, and a love that is so unique in this world and can be easily missed. I want to wrap up with a benediction, a prayer that I've always been challenged by, and I hope it challenges you a little bit today. May God bless us with discomfort at easy answers and half-truth and superficial relationships, so that we may live from deep within our heart. May God bless us with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of God's creation, so that we may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that we may reach out our hands to comfort them and to turn their pain into joy. And may God bless us with just enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in the world, so that we can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and all our neighbours who are poor. Amen. Thank you very much.